What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning into the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight, and I have a very special show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented and prolific musician. He is a musical genius and an innovator when it comes to composing, producing, and performing on the keyboards, and he is the founding member of the contemporary jazz group 4Play. Please put your hands together and welcome Grammy Award-winning jazz keyboardist, producer, and composer, Bob James. How's it going, Bob?
Going great. I can hear that little applause, hands together, all the way out through cyberspace.
Hey, man, they're definitely cheering for you, believe me.
I can't imagine it, but I'll fantasize about it nevertheless.
Oh, man, all the great ones are modest, man. Isn't that something? Well, you know, Bob, thank you for, you know, taking your time and, you know, coming on my show and chopping it up with me. I'm a huge fan of your keyboard playing and always been a fan since day one. And, you know, just to have you on the show is just truly an honor for me, and it's going to be inspiration as well. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, being a keyboard player, I think you can imagine. I don't know if you feel the way I do, but I've reached a point in my life, I can't even separate myself from the keyboard. It's just like it's one thing. And when I'm not at it, I feel a little bit alienated in some weird way. And I can feel, I don't know, distant and uncomfortable. But once I sit down and I got 88 in front of me, I'm comfortable.
I totally agree with you. I've been composing and producing since I was 14. And it's been about 21 years now, man. And I definitely can, you know, even the short journey that I had as a musician, I definitely feel, you know, lonely and just not really part of myself when I'm not playing, you know, because it is my personality. It is who I am ever since a kid. And, you know, that's all I can remember. So, yeah, I can definitely vouch for you on that one.
Good.
You know, before we start the interview, Bob, I definitely want to talk about some of the tracks that were monumental in my playing career as a keyboardist. And it's some things that you did outside of 4Play. It's a little dated and it's older, but it's, you know, it's still timeless and is relevant to me as a keyboardist. First track, Angela, the theme music from Taxi. You know, this particular track is what I gravitate to, and I talk to a lot of up-and-coming keyboardists and musicians about putting together a good combination of major and minor chord progressions in a composition. And I just feel like Angela just demonstrates that to the fullest.
I guess in my case, if I did try to think back on it, I would probably have to admit that I just couldn't make up my mind. Do I want minor or do I want major?
Wow.
So I try to get both in there.
Definitely.
But even more, I guess, ironic or whatever you'd want to call it, we never know when the special things are going to come along. I think if we could predict it, then we'd all be rich. You know, if you knew when your best moments were going to be, wouldn't that be an amazing thing? But in the meantime, you just keep going on and you keep trying things and you keep writing things. If you're a composer and if you keep improvising, if you're a jazz piano player, and sometimes it turns out good and sometimes it doesn't. And I love the process. I love taking risks. I love sitting down at the piano with a blank piece of paper and not knowing where I'm going to go with the composition. And that was pretty much what it was with the TV series Taxi. They came to me. I didn't really know what they wanted. And I actually submitted a different piece for what I thought might appeal to them as the theme, because I was thinking New York City, cab drivers, a lot of fast-paced, loud noise, taxi horns blasting, sure. You know. So I came in with a kind of high-energy piece, but I also was trying to present some contrasting things, and I had this little mellow thing that I thought might end up being just a background cue, and they really liked it, and they said, we think that it fits the opening montage theme that they were working on, which I hadn't even seen. And one thing led to another, and I said, well, yeah, whatever you want. It's okay with me. And that ended up being the theme and being heard by, you know, millions of people over a long period of time. I could have never predicted that.
You know, it's funny, man. This particular melody and song still being played by a lot of players that I know just because of the combination and the arrangements of the chords that you chose and the tempo, and it's just really soulful. And I feel that it blends in to a lot of different other genres outside of, you know, your pop and R&B things. It's really jazzy. It can go R&B. It could definitely fall into the adult contemporary, when, you know, if you really put a vocalist. I mean, it's just endless of where the song really take, you know, outside musicians like myself. And yeah, I just can't say enough about it.
Well, thank you. I do totally appreciate it. I try not to think about it too much, because I think that way lies madness. If you try to analyze some things too much, you'd try to do the same thing again, and I could almost guarantee that that wouldn't work if I tried to do the same thing the same way or follow some kind of a formula.
Right.
And so hopefully I haven't. I really have tried to just accept that it was a gem, that the right thing happened at the right place at the right time, and now I've moved on to do other things.
Definitely. But you know, you started out as a jazz fusion keyboardist back in some of your early works, and you know, which brings me to my next track I wanted to speak on. Was with the collaboration you did on David Sanborn, you and him on the Double Vision CD.
Mm-hmm.
More Than Friends, Bob, is probably the heaviest song I've heard for composition as far as chord progression and just the blended styles, and just the whole mood of the track was just off the meters when I heard it. You know, and particularly towards the end of the song, it was when you started throwing a lot of those augmented chords for the change, and oh man, that just really took it to another level. I love augmented chords, but the way you played it on that particular track.
Let you and me get a conference call going with Marcus Miller, because he's the man on that song.
Really?
And I have to admit it right off the bat. It's his composition. I think I played it pretty good. I think I made it come to life, and maybe I voicings or whatever. But Marcus was the bass player on that project, and David and Marcus had worked a lot together, and we had asked him to come in with you know, some creative stuff as well. And he came in with two things immediately, one of which was Maputo, which killed. It became a big, big hit for us all over the world. And the other one, which, you know, I love your explanation of it, but a lot of people don't get some of that sophisticated chord stuff that he had come up with. And, you know, it's still nice, but it is a killer thing. And I got to give credit where credit is due. Marcus is a great guy, great musician, and I was lucky to be playing his tune.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. I mean, he's been out there, another industry legend and a pure genius when it comes to composition. And as far as a bass player, man, it's second to none right there.
I had a little moment a few years ago with over in Korea. I was waiting to do my sound check for a show that I was going to do, and I was out in this big theater, sitting in the back of the theater, and before it was my turn to go to the stage, I was looking up there, and Brian McKnight was getting ready to do his sound check. And he sat down at the piano, and I only knew him as a singer. I actually, at that time, didn't even know that he played the piano.
Sure.
And he started playing More Than Friends. And I looked up there, and I've been doing a double take, and he was playing all the changes, and then at some point he looked out at me, because I guess he knew that I was out there. I didn't even realize that. I hadn't even said hello to him. And it was like some shorthand signal that he was sending out to me that he liked the Double Vision album, and he really liked that tune, and he could play the hell out of it on the piano.
Definitely. You know, I'm one of the fans. You know, when I'm into a groove, I'm a huge fan of playing covers, and this is something that I've probably just played daily. Just because it has a great reach, you know, it's like, you know, you're hitting those whole step augmented chords, you know, sometimes the reach and placements as a keyboardist, you know, things can kind of get fat fingering away. So I just think it has really great precision for any keyboardist to take a hold of and really listen and mimic what you're doing.
I have a lot of ongoing thing with my close friend, drummer, composer, Harvey Mason in the Forte group. And every time I come in with a new song, he accuses me of having five songs instead of one, that I tried to squeeze five in one, and then he could take one out of my 10 chords and make that into a tune.
Wow. Wow.
And we laugh about it, and it's something that I guess if you are deep into loving the whole idea of substitute chords and all that kind of stuff, that I can't resist it, that I have a hard time just accepting a straight minor triad and let it go, you know. And maybe that's a little bit of a clue to why the Taxi theme worked well, because I think it has a lot fewer of those substitution craziness than some of the other.
Yeah, I mean, Taxi, I mean, that's all major minor, you know, but it's still hot the way you played it. But when you really want to get outside the box is when you get into the substitute chords and, you know, the 10, 12, 15 finger progressions, you know, the extended. So,
yeah, I mean, I want to use all 10 of my fingers. I'm not happy if I only have to use 4 or 5.
Hey, there you go. You know, the new CD release, Bob, Let's Touch the Sky. I mean, we got the new band member, Mr. Chuck Loeb, who I had the honor of interviewing a few weeks ago. And, you know, the combination is still timeless. I mean, you can't go wrong with Chuck for one. But there's a lot of new flavor on the new CD, which I happen to enjoy. Again, like the tracks like Above and Beyond. You have the Third Degree, which I really felt that Chuck really had a chance to shine as his signature guitar looks, you know, for some of his early works like Pocket Change and a couple other tracks. So, I mean, it was just a really great blended CD when I heard it. I mean, we were talking about some of the tracks that you guys had a chance to perform on stage. And, you know, I told him, I said, man, to me, the whole entire CD translate well in a live environment, you know, when I heard the track. So, I mean, you just really can't go wrong with song you choose, you know, on a night-to-night basis if you're performing.
I feel so blessed and so fortunate that we've had these three incarnations in Foreplay. And sometimes it's a little bit awkward to compliment Chuck too highly, because it almost seems like that I'm making some kind of an inference about Larry Carlton or Lee Ritenour, and I'm really not. I'm just feeling like, wow, this is amazing that we have had the chance to work creatively with three such different talents. They all three are so different ultimately, I don't think I should worry about comparisons, because you can't really compare Chuck with Larry. They just approach their instrument in a completely different way. And maybe Chuck and Lee have a little bit more in common in the sense that they are so studio oriented. They're such great producers in their own right. And they really know their way around all of the nuances of production and all of that. But even then, there's just a world of difference between those two. And right now we're in 2010. Here we are with Chuck. It's really great. You don't know when you ask somebody to join a group whether they're going to be into it or not. And so we were curious to see what Chuck's reaction would be. But the fact is, we're about almost 6 months into it now, and I know that Chuck is really, really happy to have this experience. I knew also that he wouldn't immediately be aware of the subtlety of how a group evolves over a long period of time, and we've been together for almost 20 years, and Nathan and Harvey and I have a bond that is extremely strong. But Chuck rose to that challenge. He loved the mystery of it and what's going on with this group and how do you make the decisions and put them together. And instead of being shy about it, he just jumped in. And the song you mentioned, by the way, The Third Degree, that was the first thing he brought in. And it was amazing on a lot of levels, one of which was that it sent us back to the practice room. And it was not a song that you could just sit down and play automatically.
Sure.
There was a lot of meat and a lot of virtuosity that we had to jump in and say, come on, let's go. And it's been great. And I anticipate a lot more really fun and challenging experiences with Chuck being part of the group. We've already had a lot of them in live performance. We've performed with him already in Shanghai, in New York, in California, and this has only been a short period of time.
Wow. It's an amazing CD again. I mean, all of your guys' works over the past years have been phenomenal. But, yeah, this CD, you know, it's no stranger to hits, man.
Thank you.
Now, Bob, I got to ask you, as a keyboardist, there's a particular sound that I call your signature piano. You played on a couple of tracks. You definitely played on one of your older songs, 101 Eastbound. And you threw a little bit on the Above and Beyond track. It sounds like there's a grand piano layered with like a bell pad patch from like a Roland D50 tuned up to a higher level. It really brings out the harmonics of the piano. Is that a basic piano, or are you layering stuff on top of that?
Well, I've worked very hard over many years to try to refine that sound. I've had a love for this kind of layered, thick piano sound for a long time, and it's gone through a lot of permutations. I can remember back before the days when we had the luxury of very sophisticated MIDI stuff, when I actually had to either play with two keyboards stacked one on top of each other, where I play with one thing with the left hand and one thing with the right hand in order to stack it, or record one part and then overdub the other part and try to get as close as I could to playing the same thing. But in more recent years, my instrument of choice is the Yamaha Discovir, which essentially is a grand piano. It's just a conventional piano, but it also has MIDI. And so I can MIDI my choice of electric piano sounds, and then just play the piano normally, the way I would play if it was just a technique. And then I blend in the electric piano of choice, my current one, is also a Yamaha motif, and it's one of the electric piano standard patches on the Yamaha motif. There's nothing really mumbo-jumbo about it. But it's such a part of my touch that there are a whole lot of things that I do after I choose the sound to try to make sure that I'm not driving it too hard or going into distortion or all those kind of things. And so it's a constant refining process. When I play live, I have volume control over how much, what percentage of that electric piano sound that I use in relationship to the acoustic piano, and that changes from one tune to the next. But that's kind of my world.
It's amazing, and it's definitely a signature sound. Like I said, I haven't heard anyone use that sound but you, and it definitely stands out and all the tracks that you've been recording over the years. And, you know, I find myself trying to, you know, get sounds that are close to it just because it sounds so right. And it sits really well in the mix where it doesn't drown out the remaining songs and the instruments that you have going on within the song. You know, it just, like, again, it's, like you said, it's thick, but, you know, it has its own separation when I listen to it also with the other patches that are going on in the song.
Well, I have a big challenge to try to get the ideal combination of those things, because many places that we go, I don't really have the opportunity to have access at a really good Discovir grand piano. And even if I do, we also have major logistical things with miking and feedback and everything else when I perform with the acoustic piano on stage. And it just adds to the complication. And if we don't have enough sound check and all those things, it sometimes can be a nightmare. And that has led me to often thinking about whether or not, under some circumstances, that I would substitute the real acoustic piano for a sampled acoustic piano, still played through some kind of, obviously, the best that I could find, a touch-sensitive controller. But then I could still stack by having another synth, another rack synth, another software synth. And as you know, I'm sure that we're headed more and more down the path of software rather than big, bulky instruments that you'd have to travel around with. And in some ways, I'd love to just have a laptop and stick it out there on stage, one keyboard, and the laptop would do everything else.
Sure.
But I've tried everything that I know of, and I've never really been able to be happy with that kind of setup.
Yeah, I think for live performance, I think the best combination to use is going to be hardware with a little bit of software hosting going on. You know, if you have a dedicated host for all your virtual instruments, but you know, you're still triggering everything through your, you know, external boards and modules. But yeah, you know, use the software sense for sweeteners and, you know, a little ear candy for on top of your existing hardware sense is what I tend to use also.
Yeah, the bottom line is that there's not even close to the amount of touch sensitivity in the, what is it, 128 levels of MIDI volume or MIDI velocity. Mm-hmm. And I feel it. I notice it. I love the power of it. I love to be able to MIDI and get all the additional orchestral colors going on. But when it comes to really playing with dynamics and phrasing and touch and everything else, for me, there's absolutely no substitute for the great, great, great piano, whether it be a Yamaha or Steinway or whatever. And in my case, usually it turns out to be a Yamaha.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yamaha makes great pianos, even in their Motif series on their racks. I mean, it's just a really great patch. You know, I kind of just use it as a... my piano sounds are coming strictly from my Motif, and I'm running Spediff. Also, it comes as a digital out right into my sound card just so I can get that digital signal. And, you know, just have it as a standalone patch. It sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a keyboardist, Bob, I got to ask you, what DAW system are you tracking on? Pro Tools, are you using Logic, or are you on a PC format?
Well, the engineer that I've trusted and worked with very, very intimately for the last almost 20 years is Ken Freeman. He's mixed and recorded almost all of my solo projects, and he's been the engineer also for four-play projects. And he is, of course, Pro Tools, because that's his world, and everything else is going on out there in the profession, and Pro Tools is still the sort of standard software
sure.
application. But I got very comfortable with Digital Performer, and that's what I still use. I just really did not want to switch back over, learn a brand new way of working. Ken has tried to seduce me into doing that quite a few times.
Sure.
But I resisted it. One of the main reasons being that I think Performer is much more MIDI sophisticated than Pro Tools is. Pro Tools has not really focused on MIDI and much more on extremely sophisticated digital editing of audio.
Sure.
And it's on a whole other level from Performer. But I don't really usually need to do that, because I'm creating, performing at the piano. And the power of being able to record MIDI, edit MIDI, manipulate the MIDI is extremely important to me. And very often, if I'm creating, I wait till the very last minute before I even commit my stuff. All that MIDI data gives me so much power to edit and change and whatever. So my particular thing, Digital Performer, has been a good friend to me.
No, Motu is a really great company. You know, they also make great sound cards as well. And, you know, Digital Performer, it's, you know, a lot of guys are using Digital Performer. You know, you brought up, you know, recording and playing with MIDI, man. I remember when I first started tracking, it was around 88, 89. MIDI was just, you know, kind of hitting the surface, you know, within the last maybe 3 years
yep.
prior. And, you know, having that flexibility of, you know, you're editing, you make one note mistake, you don't have to stop the tape and record everything over again. You know, with MIDI, I was able to, you know, take out a note, shift it where I want to, and just really make some really cool edits at sometimes. And, you know, it's been a lifesaver for me in the studio and doing sessions. And, you know, just looking where it came from, the 80s, and where it is now, it's just, you know, totally phenomenal to me, you know, where we're at now.
Yeah, me too. And I use it, I need it, I love it, I love the process of it. And I'm watching the way the digital audio is getting more and more and more sophisticated, to the point where there are digital edits that we would have thought impossible 10 years ago that are possible to make in that domain too. But I think with the keyboard, with specific notes and the way that MIDI graphically shows them in the way that the data is organized and everything else, it's just natural to me. And I don't want to give that up.
Definitely. No, I agree, man. When I see a MIDI template, it's like looking at the Matrix, you know? But, you mm-hmm. know, you understand it, and you, by you being a player, and you can kind of just almost see the rhythm and feel the rhythm on screen, and you kind of know what note it's going to be without looking at the keyboard roll on the side or thing, but you can kind of see where things at, and it's just really easy for me to, and comfortable just to view a MIDI template data where I can do my edits, you know, again, versus playing it over.
All that stuff, I humbly admit that sometimes it can be even embarrassing to look up there at the data on screen and realize where your groove was. You know, if you're rushing or if you're dragging or if your notes are not in the pocket, you can actually look up there and you can see them.
Right.
And say, oh my gosh, you know, that chord was just out. You know, it's not in the pocket.
Sure.
And you can't deny it. There's no, but it's also very, very educational because you know why and where that it wasn't in the pocket. You can look at the digital audio of the other instruments. You can see the kick drum. You can see the bass. And if they're in one place and you're either ahead or behind that, wow, that's really powerful knowledge to know that when you were playing that section, you were ahead of the game, you know, or whatever.
Definitely.
And you also know, hey, this sounds really great, and here's why, because you're right there in the pocket.
Exactly. You know, I got to ask, Bob, finding that zone as a musician is important to every musician, where it should be anyways. And, you know, I think everyone finds that comfort zone at one point or another along their musical journey. Capturing that zone for you, has it been in the studio over the years, or is it on stage with your band members, the audience's energy, and bringing that on stage with you?
It's definitely both. It's definitely both. And it's a completely different kind of energy. The studio is a manipulative place. You know that you could do it again. You know that you could fix it. You know that you could do all these things, and more than ever now with the technology going the way it's going. But live, you can't do that. Live, the audience is hearing you do it exactly at the time you do it, and you can't just stop and say, can I do that one more time?
Right.
So it's over with. That moment that you aimed for is finished. And that's really, really exciting to me.
All right, so we're approaching, you know, the end of the year, Bob, 2010. What's on the musical agenda for the remainder of 2010 and moving over to 2011?
Actually, the most exciting thing at the moment is a concert in Tokyo with a symphony orchestra in December. First time we've ever done that, and trying to combine our quartet with a large symphony orchestra is a big challenge. We've never had any of our material orchestrated that way before, and I used to do that a lot earlier in my career. I did a lot of records with fairly large ensembles, and I got a lot of work at one time in my career as an arranger, but I haven't done that much in recent years. So I've had to go back to the drawing boards, and we kind of split up the chores for this project, and I did my own pieces. I'm doing my own orchestration of the title song of our new CD, Let's Touch the Sky, and then I'm also going to do an arrangement of my old piece, Westchester Lady. Excited about that. We're considering it kind of audition, and if everything goes well, we're hoping to do more performances like that, either here in the U.S. or Europe or wherever a symphony orchestra is willing to have us collaborate.
Wow, man, that sounds like fun.
It really does. We're all nervous about it, but not having done it before, and it's a completely different kind of set of rules and discipline and everything. But we're jumping in feet first and hoping for the best.
You know, I think it's always the cool stuff is, you know, where I'm always nervous about a new project. I think that's where all my learning experience starts for me. You know what I mean? It kind of takes me out my comfort zone of doing the monotonous and repetition of production.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
So, Yeah, that,
if we get too comfortable, then you get lazy, then you just do the same things over and over, and that's not good.
Definitely. No, I'm sure that's going to work out with you guys, man. You guys are seasoned vets. I can't see nothing but great things happening on any project you guys take on. So,
thank you. Thank you.
Well, Bob, it's been a pleasure and a true honor for you being on my show. I would love to have you back and talk about the new endeavors and the concert. I want to see how that went for you, man.
Great. Let's talk again. I'd love that, too.
Well, you have a safe 2010 and 2011, and best of luck to you, man.
Okay, Spud. Great talking with you.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And a big shout out and thank you to Bob James for coming on my show and chopping it up with me. What a great show, man. Like I mentioned earlier, I'm just a huge fan of Bob. And, you know, he's just demonstrated to me what it means to be a great keyboardist and a composer and really thinking outside of the box and really, you know, building those dynamics as a keyboardist. You know, it's just really important traits to have as a musician and a keyboardist. And he's definitely somebody who I consider the source to go to and pull from when you want to get new ideas and really be inspired and really take your ideas to another level, man. He's the guy you need to listen to and really start pulling in some of his chops as a keyboardist, man. Your whole playing style will just change and you will just grow as a musician. You know, just listen to somebody as seasoned as he is. So a big shout out and thank you to Bob James. And for more information on Bob James, you need to hit his website up at www.bobjames.com. www.bobjames.com. And for more information on 4Play, hit their website up as well. www.4playjazz.com. www.4playjazz.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit my website up at www.spud2tight.com. www.spud2tight.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast, so if you have an iPhone, an iPod, a PC, or a Mac, go to your iTunes store, type in the Producers Corner, click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And I want to thank everybody for tuning and listening in today. And for the remainder of the show, I'm going to let the track that's playing in the background close out the show. And the title of the track is called You're My Thrill, and it's featuring Anita Baker. And it's off 4Play's new CD, Let's Touch the Sky. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.